Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions. I'm your moderator. This is Janice Summers, our interviewer, and welcome to Huailing Ding, today's guest in Room 42. Professor Ding teaches technical communication at North Carolina State University. Her research focuses on intercultural professional communication, technical communication, risk communication, and epidemic communication. Her recent projects have been exploring the connection between artificial intelligence, communication technologies, risk communication, and social justice. As the principal investigator of a large interdisciplinary National Science Foundation CXL grant, she's been leading her team to examine how AI tools have been transforming the job market and job screening processes in the US. Today, she's here to help us start answering the question, what assumptions about pre-hire screening criteria and procedures are in use, and what's their impact on job application materials and strategies? Welcome.
Thank you, Liz, for the great introduction.
Huailing, we are so excited to have you here. And there is so much to talk about. Like your interest and your research and your background, your teaching is so fascinating. But one of the things I want to ask is, you know, the topic on point of AI and the recruitment and job search process, how did you get involved with this particularly? You had to write a grant for this, right? This is part of your grant research. Yeah.
Right.
What's the origin to this? What inspired you?
Great question. Thank you, Janice. So my interest started, I think, 3 years ago when I, you know, watched very closely the AI competition between the US and China and how it was kind of like an arms race, right? Okay, who would be the international leader in this emerging field that will have a great potential in terms of technological breakthrough? So I started with some intercultural comparison of AI policies in the US and in China. And then AI started to be more widely used in communications. So I started to see, you know, like user testing for AI assisted writing. And then some of my students would come to me and say, hey, Dr. Ding, I can't get past the video interviews. I'm like, what video interviews? And they were like, I have, you know, I've calls from recruiters saying, okay, we like your resume, right? We'll invite you to a online video interview, and then you'll be talking to a camera. And then that will be screened. And they were like, I never hear back from them after that video interview. So that got me interested, and I did some quick search to make sure I won't be doing my students a disservice when I teach them how to write, right, for job search.
And
then I realized, oh my gosh, those are not really like the traditional video interviews. Those are video interviews that will be evaluated with image recognition, facial recognition, voice recognition AI tools. I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And I looked for
something that seemed a little innocent.
Yeah.
You could, you know, you unpack all those layers and there is a lot more complicated.
Right. Yeah. And once you look beyond that, it's like, okay, who is doing the evaluation? How are those videos evaluated? How are candidates ranked? Especially when I found out, you know, those who had more difficulties going beyond video interviews tend to be, you know, ethnic minority students or non-traditional students. And that was really like a red flag to me. So I looked into that and then found out there were already all kinds of the so-called HR technologies or automation of recruiting, you know, or AI assisted recruiting. So that was also the time when one of my friends passed their request for proposal, RFP from National Science Foundation to me, which deals with AI and future jobs. Mm-hmm. So it was perfect timing, and I managed to put a team together working on, you know, retraining, re-employment assistance for manufacturing workforce, And while other co-PIs, my co-principal investigators, worked on the engineering and AI side, I focus mostly on AI and recruiting and employment. So basically, how do we get screened today in the job market?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And there's just so many challenges with relying on AI from a recruiting perspective, because it's only as good as who programmed and how they programmed, because it's trying to interpret everything, right? It's trying to interpret a lot.
Right.
How do they account for all of the facets of the human being? It's
difficult. So So for instance, I was trying to map the workflow, right, of automotive recruiting just in terms of resume screening. So we hear the use of applicant tracking system,
right?
Job ad person, resume person, and then job ad and resume matching, and then a ranking of candidates. So it's the collaborative efforts of different AI tools, especially natural language processing tools.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, my team read a lot of the engineering AI publications, natural language processing publications, early in maybe before 2010, before the tools became commercialized. And those papers talk about possible ways to design those tools from an engineering perspective. So it's really interesting to see how any job ad will be broken down into maybe 80, 100 data points.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like, let's say it's a 300 word job ad. It will be automatically broken down into 80 data points, with some of the ones being like, okay, top cut, right? If you don't pass this, your resume will be rejected right away. And you can imagine those data points would be location,
mm-hmm.
Years of employment. Those are like their thing. So I heard about how candidates were rejected because they were 1 month short of their, you know, work experience requirement. And AI, you know, they don't negotiate with any human beings, right? If their job ad asks for 3 years or 36 months, and I have only 35 months, most likely I will end up being the rejected pile, right? And the numbers show that, especially for the larger companies, like Fortune 500 companies, any openly will have maybe 250 and more applications. And Janice, when you talk about recruiting, I looked into recruiting a little bit, the staffing side, right? And I realized how the staffing side also have to compete, right? For that one job openly, because they will be paid by, you know, how many positions you help to fill. So mm-hmm. there's also, not only employers need to fill the jobs much more quickly to reduce the cost, right, of mm-hmm. a transition from one person to another. Recruiters have to run very quickly to make sure they grab the right candidate so they can get paid for that one job filled. So that was really interesting. So making the cut, right? And then there were additional data points such as degrees, right? Those are all pretty quantifiable, measurable things. Degree, mm-hmm. okay, we need a degree in technical communication or professional writing or writing and composition or journalism. That's easy. However, right. when we move on to the skills part, it's messy. Yeah. Job titles are messy, right? I can't be a human writer.
Yeah, job titles are, especially I think in this field, Liz, you're mm-hmm. muted. Yeah. I think especially in this field, job titles are a mess.
Mm-hmm.
They're mm-hmm. a mess because it just seems like everybody keeps changing their job titles.
Right.
For some reason. And mm-hmm. If you look at like the skills that are required in the job that they do, it, you know, it doesn't change all that much, but the job title
yeah.
changes. So how, I don't know how you even go up against that.
So we look into that as well. And the better ways to do it is, you know, so the computer scientists we work with, they were trying to look for a range of job titles, right, related terms. And if we are in techcom, then UX writer or content strategist or, you know, related job titles should be included, right? But depending on which applicant tracking system or job matching system is being used, some of them may be better at doing that than others. So, right. Aaron, that's a great question. I think, you know, you can describe your job responsibilities. Remember, job titles is one way of screening. And then the most important thing will be the skills. The most, the toughest to measure, right? So for instance, I was really fortunate to also have access to some labor market analytical tools such as Burning Glass. Mm-hmm. And I can talk about that very briefly as well. So yeah. if you pay attention to how labor market analytics are compiled, the Department of Labor offer ONET, right, which is more static, which is updated once every 2 years.
Right.
And if you look for ONET and technical writing, you can see the type of skills and job titles and payment, salary, and so on, right, in that.
Now, how do the job titles, because they lag the industry, right?
They lag, right.
How do their job titles match what commercially is going on?
They right. don't.
They don't.
Unfortunately, yeah, all that, yeah. They don't, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How bad is it? Like, what do you see?
Oh, net, they don't. They are so bad that if you look at the zip code, right, how we as a field are matched with academic programs. And I, as a graduate program administrator, really hate the system because the zip code, if you look at the zip code, right, So yeah. it's like, okay, we don't have graduate students graduating from our programs, or very few, right? Like in the past 10 years, we may have 15 students graduating. So it's not measuring the job market very well. So what labor analytics tool such as Burning Glass, what it does is to come up with its own professional codes.
Uh-huh.
So it come up with a much wider range of job titles. For the type of jobs that technical communicators may have. So that helped to catch that a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a job title. And then the skills. So my engineering team, when they measure the skills, what they use is what they call skill vectors. And that's quite commonly used in AI as well. So they come up with the categories of skills that a job requires, right? So if we are in technical communication, the categories we have will be writing, editing, right? And then specialized tools, and then maybe usability, you know, research, and so on and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they use synonyms. So the algorithm, the NLP tools will be looking for synonyms, and they try to define those synonyms so that the algorithms will recognize related terms, right?
Right.
So that's how their skills are defined in their occupation mm-hmm. level. But mm-hmm. then when we move on to individual jobs, different jobs require different things. So if we want to make sure we can be matched, our resume can be matchable to the one job ad, we'd better do some, you know, serious manual matching to make sure, okay, here are the skills that are required, and here's how I reflect and prove I have those skills in my resume.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure our resumes are matchable.
Right. So you have to be, you know, do your data analytics and start analyzing all the various career paths as well to make sure that, you know, you're guiding your career in the right trajectory, especially when you're starting out.
Yes. Yes, right. Definitely. Mm.
Go on. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. So we talk about data points, right? So a job ad will be broken down into over 80 different data points. And then my resume, one page resume, will be broken down again into 80 different data points, right? Mm-hmm. Location. Okay. Yeah. Work history. How long have you been in this position? How long have you been in this field? And then educational background. If they say, okay, a master degree is preferred and I have a bachelor degree, most likely, if I have a competitive pool of candidates, I won't get anything, right? So those are going to be matched. Okay, it's almost like you create a table. I think you can probably manually break down the job ad into those important data points and then put your resume there and say, okay, do I match? How much do I match, right? I think that's definitely doable. And that's exactly what their AI tools are doing on a much larger scale, very quickly. Every resume gets maybe 2 seconds in the matching process.
Well, but I mean, it's kind of a necessary evil. Because when you get flooded with resumes, so your estimate on 250 resumes is very small. I don't think that's nearly what recruiter. I can tell you from a recruiter's perspective, that's kind of small. That's a small pool. That's a tiny pool. Like that's almost enough for me to personally have a conversation with all those people. Like, so that they get volumes and volumes of resumes. Yeah. And so they have to weed through it somehow. So those are pretty understandable, right? So far. When you're talking about the resume matching to the job description. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other AI techniques that people will use in screening candidates out?
Right. So for the job ad resume matching, 75% of candidates will be screened out. Mm-hmm. And then,
wow.
Yeah, 75%. And then depending on the recruiting agency or staffing agency, and depending on the employer, you know, maybe the rest of their 25% may be invited to have automated video interviews. And then that will be screened as a second round. So eventually the user journey or the life circle of automated candidate screening will end up with a short list, right, of 3 to 5 candidates, which will be passed on to the employer as, you know, here are your candidates that are worth your time of interviewing, engaging with, and then eventually giving an offer to, right? So in that process, we also have video interviews that will be done at our own home, right? And will be recorded at our convenience and anytime, right? And then will be collected and automatically evaluated and ranked by the recruiting agency. And as I said, those will be evaluated with facial recognition and voice recognition tools. So it was really interesting to say, okay, some of the early tools, right, they will be looking at, you know, eye contact and facial expression, and then they'll be measuring intonation, change of tones, right, whether you are engaging with the camera, right, during the video interviews to show your enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And very few actually look at the actual content of what I as a candidate talk about. So that was like—
Yeah, you could be talking about anything. It's just interpreting, are you telling the truth? Right? I mean, it's looking at all these other facts, but I just don't, I don't know. To me personally, I think the video interviewing is a pretty dicey area because I see so many potential for flaws. I mean, how do you account for people who, you know,
neuroatypical
languages that they speak? How do you account for people who have disabilities? Mm-hmm. How do you account for, you know, a lot of different face structures? I just don't know. What are your findings on this whole video conundrum?
So the video interviews, I think we definitely need, you know, access to better cameras, you know, like lighting, background, mm-hmm. right? And then those of us who have darker skin colors, you know, may have more a tougher time because of the way their algorithms were trained, right? With mostly Caucasian users face images. And then there were also, I don't know, intonation. I mean, how do you judge enthusiasm based on intonation? I think there's a lot of biases built in those algorithms, right? So it's so problematic that Illinois, the state of Illinois, actually issued a regulation saying, you know, we don't, you know, allow the use of video interviews. I think back in 2018, and then, you know, and there's also a requirement of being transparent. You know, what do you measure? How do you measure it, right? Depending on what kind of institution we're talking about or employers we're talking about. Another thing that's widely used is social profiling. So I was shocked to hear that social profiling, so basically social media content, mm-hmm. will be monitored even in college admission processes. Mm-hmm. So for teenagers, right, who are applying for admission into top 10, let's say Ivy League universities, they'd better monitor their social media, you know, content very closely. And for us professionals, you know, there are AI tools that will be scrolling the web looking for any online activities content, even, you know, the type of content we click like or we comment on in LinkedIn or Facebook to come up with, you know, like some analysis of the applicant's personality.
Exactly. And they track that to make decisions on how you will behave as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Everything you do digitally has a footprint.
Right. And we have to, I don't know. It's kind of like the message. What is a message we give to our students? I think I talk about this in my graduate class, the capstone class, and students asked, you know, is it in my interest to post less, right? Or should I still be visible in social media? And I was like, I don't know. I think if you are comfortable sharing your personal like daily activities in Facebook, go ahead, but stay professional, right? Mm-hmm. Don't be too personal. You know, think about it. Anything that's published online will be there forever, right? Even mm-hmm. though you delete the content, it may still be findable if someone else says that, right? So be extremely careful.
Yeah, because what you do can live with you forever.
Right.
And you might always have to be trying to explain something. But when it comes to employment, you might be screened out
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
a result of some of these findings. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, that's a conundrum in the recruitment process, is because they have to screen out so many rather than filter people in.
Yeah. Right. The message I find to be really interesting is, you know, HR says no and hiring manager says yes. So the first round of screening, the AI will reject 75% and then the rest of the 25% will be further screened. Until, you know, if I am lucky enough, I become one of their last few finalist, and then I will be in contact with any human being in the process.
It's so strange to even think about.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I get the first level. I get the resume, right? Mm-hmm. I get that. And I get the automated tools that'll kind of help match things and filter, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. you got to do something. It's a lot of manual yeah. labor to try and go through that, especially when you're faced with, I tell you, more than 250, way more than 250 candidates.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it's for a prime job, you know, or a popular job, you're going to get a lot more than that. So you got to do something. Screen. But
it's got to be even harder when you don't have any good keywords matching because the both sides are changing it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? People chasing titles and employers changing the job to match whatever title they happen to think it is, too, as well as the unique skill sets for the position they're hunting for.
That's true. And I think that's why, you know, but you can always like look for and do your research, right? It becomes like, if you're looking for a job, it becomes first and foremost, you're a researcher.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You have to go out there and do your research and look not just at one company that you want to go to, but a bunch of companies that are looking for this type of field.
Mm-hmm.
And Liz brings up a really good point. The title thing is just a nightmare,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that bucket of titles, I don't even know. It's like huge now and it changes constantly. So, but it's the skill sets and you have to look at what are they looking for at the meet. And then I think that becomes pretty easy or, well, less complicated to do a data query and then compile the information and then look at your own experience and figure out, do you have it or not?
Mm-hmm.
But the video,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that, how do you go up against that?
I think.
Wear a mask? I, you know, I don't know. Have somebody else sit in for you? What do you do? I mean.
Yeah, right.
I think. The algorithms will have its own screening criteria, and it's yeah. going to be—it's never going to be transparent. So
we—that's the problem,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So the only thing I think we can do is to ask the question: what are the commonly used criteria, right, in video interview evaluation? So and then how can I do my best to present okay. myself, right, in that interview, knowing those will be the criteria that will be used to screen candidates. So, I mean, other things like how I look, right, in terms of age or skin color or my accent, there's nothing I can do about it. That's me, right? But mm-hmm. other things, I mean, there are things that will be under my control, and there will be things that will be out of my control. So I think my suggestion for students would be, you know, do your best,
mm-hmm.
be literate, you know, knowing what the tools is all about, how it will be evaluating who you are, and then be yourself and do your best, right? We can't hire someone to interview for us. There's no way that will work. So there are limitations. You know, how much we can do, right? How much control we have. I think there's always limitation there. Mm-hmm. And it's just like life, right? If we have an in-person interview, if one of the committee members happen to, you know, look for a male candidate and I'm a female candidate, I'm already at a disadvantage, right? There are subjective yeah. expectations and biases in the human processed interviews as well.
Well, the hiring, I mean, ultimately is subjective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, I think what you're trying to do is run through the gauntlet to get to a very subjective process.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So transparency in AI is one thing that should be out there. That's not there now. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know that that the video is going to go away. Do you see that growing or shrinking?
I think it's growing. Like, applicant tracking system has become increasingly more popular just because of their costs, right? Cost of hiring, you know, cost of waiting to fill one position, right? And then their video interviews, it's the same thing. If I can interview 20 candidates in one day without using my own schedule, right? That's saving me how many days of working, right? Of my week. So it's definitely cost effective.
Yes.
And I think that's a huge factor in pushing that argument and in marketing those type of tools.
So the state of Illinois case, you said, came out with they banned. Could you expand on that? Did you say that they banned video as a pre-screen? What did you mentioned earlier? The state of Illinois said something about.
So let's see. I think I can't remember very clearly. I think it's a regulation saying we don't allow video interviews, automated video interviews to be used in the state of Illinois. Whether it's to provide discrimination or it's because of ethical concerns, they say. I definitely need to go back and read a little bit more closely. But that's the only state that have issued any regulations about video interviews.
Fascinating.
So how would they, because this is going to grow, right? Video, you're seeing that as a growing trend in the recruitment process. And it's growing at the university level as well for admittance into university. The video?
Not yet.
But the social part is the social media.
So social profiling is definitely there, right? Usually, I think when we hire, how many of us will go online and do a quick search of our top candidates to say, okay, what does she actually, what is she, he or she doing, right? Now we don't have to do that manually. Some of the applicant tracking system can do that very quickly and then present one paragraph of summary about our candidates. Just one paragraph. Okay, what they look like online, right? What the activities look like.
The types of things they like.
I don't know how much detail we have in those paragraphs of description, but definitely they will summarize what's going on in their
You know, you just scrolling on a page and staying on a page a long time, all this data is being recorded by somebody and something's going to happen with that data. So anytime you're on a digital, and the funny thing is if you're not on digital presence, that sends also another flag. Also shows your complete avoidance of social media will show and send up a whole other
sites.
Send up a whole nother signal.
Yes.
So with all of this AI, it's amazing anybody gets hired.
Students do get hired.
It does happen. But I think it's the ethical concern that I have. People with disabilities. And people who, you know, don't fit what that software engineer who is writing the algorithm in the dark room, locked in their own sphere
describing himself
reality, right? Or, you know, like that's how these things are being written by very limited pool.
Let's test this. Hey, buddy, make a video
for me. Hey, buddy, let's video you. Yeah. That's a good sampling of the population. I just worry about those things. And so what do I do if I don't fit that mold? What if I do, if I have a speech problem, if I have a stuttering problem or if I have, you know, a thick accent, if I am not a very, you know, overly confident person, how do I meet that challenge of having to be videoed?
For video interviews?
Yeah.
I think the thing is, you know, do your best, get prepared. And then there are plenty of positions today, right, that still don't require automated video interview. So maybe go for those as well. Depending on which industry you are in, right? If I am an Asian graduate student applying for jobs in business versus in IT, if I get asked to use video interviews, I may do better in the IT field than the business field, right? So depending on, you know, it depends on, you know, what the industry, the employees in the industry look like in terms of their ethnic composition. Mm-hmm. And then there are still plenty of jobs that don't require automated job interviews. So I think the students I talked about, they eventually got hired through in-person connection, moving from co-op or intern positions to full-time positions because their colleagues and their employers saw their, you know, strength, right?
Yeah.
And the sense that the value added, the sense that they can contribute to the organization as a whole. So I think there are alternative ways to get there.
Right. Yeah, I think, and I don't think that that has ever changed since the beginning of time, since employment first started, back whenever it first started. Mm-hmm. It really is a relationship, right?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And those are the strongest employment factors, is who do you know, right? Because the number one thing in recruitment is always asking people, well, who do you know? Right, because you want to build that pool, that resource of people. And when you're bringing people into companies, a lot of times it's who do you know? Unless you're intentionally trying to diversify your workplace, then you want to know who they don't know, right? Because just hiring people who know you is not going to end up with a very rich, diverse workforce. It's going to end up with a very slanted workforce. So, but relationships do matter.
Mm-hmm.
And they do influence. So some of the things to kind of help out with the video assets, maybe do just be yourself and let it go and don't stress about it so much because there are other employers. And the other thing is we don't know, or you don't know when you're video interviewing, what factors they're measuring, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think your advice for them to be confident and just be themselves is, I think, the only thing you can do right now when it comes to video.
Practice.
And not stress about it because it's not the end of the world and it's not the only employer.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the things I think will be helpful, you know, is to, you know, the criteria, right? So you can do some video recording of your own interview. Like if it's a 3-minute interview, we can find commonly asked questions and video record ourselves talking to camera and then look at our performance and say, okay, here are some I tend to do, which will not be helpful, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we can make strategic adjustment mm-hmm. and changes to help us to stand out better in those automated processes.
Mm-hmm. And now, are there are you finding that companies, you know, are knowledgeable of the fact that this could adversely impact somebody with a disability? Are they putting that as a front before the video requirement?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, we do know that people, for instance, employees, candidates with autism, Like they won't feel comfortable engaging with anyone, right? And in terms of eye contact, so they will have difficulty getting through the video interviews and when competing with other candidates. So I don't know how companies, employers can add the consideration of disability and diversity in their screening process. Those criteria will be there, and unless they specifically call attention to the need to, for instance, to bring more diverse candidates, people with disabilities, right, into their finalist, that won't happen
mm-hmm.
in the automation process.
Can someone ask, I don't know who how you get the answer, but can you ask about what AI tool someone is using, right? As a candidate, can you say, hey, which tool are you using to screen, right? And so you can sort of find out, well, this tool puts emphasis on these things, this one puts emphasis on those things,
mm-hmm.
right? Is there a way to get at that even?
Yeah, one of my graduate students tried to do that while doing some backend coding analysis. Mm-hmm. And most of their responses she got was no response, no one responded. And when a couple of their companies responded, they would say it's our proprietary
mm-hmm.
codes. And
yeah, right.
We can't share that with you. So I think there's definitely the black box.
Can an employer ask about the tool being used by recruiting companies so that they can know where its plus or minuses are?
Yes, you will get a lot of marketing materials, you know, like choose an applicant tracking system.
Very carefully scripted marketing materials.
Yes. Yes. You have so many, you know, vendors to choose from. So,
mm-hmm.
of course, it's technical marketing tools, right? And those materials are technical marketing documents, but they offer more insights than what's publicly available about how the tools are built, how they screen candidates.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, unless you're on the inside in the HR department at an employer that's using video, you don't know how they're weighting the video,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? The video mm-hmm. might not be the determining factor. It's just weighted. So it's given mm-hmm. a certain grade. But it's mm-hmm. not the only factor that they use.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why also they're careful in couching it. And I think your advice to be as comfortable as you can and own yourself
mm-hmm.
when you're videoing. And if you're a person who's nervous about videoing, then video often.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right? Honestly, be who you are, because who you are is how you are when you show up at work anyways. So, and there is a factor of, you know, there's more than one job out there, right? And not all mm-hmm. of them are going to be a fit for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't select you, they're probably not right for you anyways. Maybe right. not right now.
Right.
Maybe
right.
in the future. So don't, it's not a personal insult to you
mm-hmm.
because you will get a job. You will find a job. It's just you need to go and look at other places. I think the most important thing is that becoming a data analyst. You were talking about mm-hmm. earlier about analyzing the data and researching the field,
mm-hmm.
And staying engaged in the field that you're interested in, because right. those relationships that you make there are going to matter.
Right.
And so I think getting to know a good recruiter. A good mm-hmm. headhunter. Just understand they're not your therapist.
Right.
They're not. And they can only do what they can do, but getting to know good recruiters
mm-hmm.
and having a good relationship with good recruiters, because yeah. that's what recruiters do, is they're always engaged in what's happening and what right. employers are trying to do. And they right. touch more than one employer.
Right.
So having a good relationship with a good recruiter, I think, is key.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So one of the exercises I would encourage all my students to use before they write their resumes is to use a corpus analysis tool called Concordance or AntCat. Hmm. So they can, I'll ask students to maybe select the top 10 job ads they are interested in applying for, use a specific title, and then compile those job ads into one document and save it as a plain text TXT file. And then AntCat will process through those job ads and come up with a list with frequencies for the keywords. So they can go through those keywords and look at co-location words, what words go together. And that will give them some really important insights into, you know, the important skills emphasized by this job title, right? By this type of jobs in general. Mm-hmm. And they can try to use the language and the skill, highlight those skills when they apply for jobs. And then when they apply for individual jobs, of course, we want to tailor our application packages to make sure we reflect that one employer's need as well. So Janice, as you said, it's a lot of, you know, analysis, decomposition. So it's all, I want to emphasize, you know, computational thinking, right? Remember, job ads are broken down into 80 data points, and our resumes will be, you know, reduced to data points as well. So how do you decompose job ads? How do you decompose your own resume into those data points and make sure you can do as much matching as possible? I think that's all the homework anyone can do with a simple tool such as AntCat.
Yep, awesome. Exactly.
And here we are out of time. What a great way to end it. Some advice on what to do and how to do it.
Yes, it's been such a delight talking to you. I can't believe our time is up. We're actually over time. I was ignoring Liz telling me time is up. I'm like, no.